Hello, I'm Brett Conrad. This is number 0457, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0457. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Douglas Smythe, who is a shaving expert. He believes we are all being lied to by the major multi-blade razor companies.
When I do a speaking engagement anywhere, I always ask the room how many men here think they have sensitive skin, and 9 out of 10 hands go up, which is impossible. We can't all have sensitive skin. So what's been going on is we've been hurting our faces using these wrong tools for the job for the last 40, 50 years almost. All you need is a single blade. Multi-blades hurt your face. They shave too close. The first blade lifts the hair, the second cuts, third blade lifts, fourth one cuts, so on and so forth. So much so that it drops down below the skin and it's begging to be an ingrown. It's begging to be a razor bump. It's begging to be razor burn. We're hurting ourselves.
Conflict resolution specialist Tamara Doris shares tips on how to deal with obnoxious coworkers.
People don't always like to hear this until I explain it, but we always have to start with ourselves, because if we didn't have some trigger, if that person did not set some trigger off in ourselves, it would not bother us. This is why you'll have a friend and you'll say, oh my gosh, doesn't he or she drive you nuts? And your friend will say, no, not really. Well, that's because that person is triggering something in you. So that's not to say that there are not some people who are downright unpleasant, but that the very first place that we need to look is at ourselves and what it is that is being triggered in ourselves.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabbie, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. Among other things, he talks about Donald Trump's fixer, Michael Cohen, who owns a lot of taxi medallions.
What I know about it is he's a bum. You know what a slumlord is. Well, you got the same deal in the taxi industry. You got these guys who go out, buy the medallions. They, of course, are not going to drive the cab. And then they don't repair them. They don't take care of them. They're always having problems. They're always breaking down. He's a slumlord of taxi world. Whatever happens from now and everything else his endeavors are, it's like the chickens coming home to roost.
And there's lots and lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day, the guest Slater. The person who told you this was show number 0457 was Brett Conrad, a screenwriter who lives out in California. Brett has also made several appearances on one of my favorite podcasts, Every Friday with Dan and Olivia. He's been a welcome addition to that show because of his film knowledge. However, I don't know what the lure for him is on that show. I'm guessing he's smitten with one of the hosts. I'm working to figure out which one it is. Anyway, thank you very, very much, Brett, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? When a client at a Brooklyn barbershop complained about his haircut, the stylist threw him out of the salon via the window. The 33-year-old victim was at the Levels Barbershop in Crown Heights. Police say he threatened to withhold payment for the cut because he didn't like it. The barber was enraged and shoved him through the storefront window. Really? I thought that kind of action went out of favor with the demise of the Western. Anyway, the attack left a gaping hole in the glass. The victim's face was severely cut and his clothes was covered with blood. He was taken by ambulance to the hospital. The stylist ran off. Gee, I hope he wasn't running with scissors. That would be irresponsible. Other barbers there said they didn't know the stylist's name or how to reach him, because that's apparently part of the famous barber's code of silence. They never talk, just like the mafia. Okay, so riddle me this, Batman. Who's paying for the window if no one's talking? Yeah. Meanwhile, German firefighters are getting a new kink to their duties. They're not just training for rescuing kittens from trees and people from burning buildings anymore. No, 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 no. Now crews are being trained to rescue men who have sex toy emergencies. Apparently, for the firefighters, it's become a ton of Teutonic trouble. The new training is teaching them to cut off penis rings or extract toys from, hard-to-reach places. The new initiative was launched after a slew of calls dealing with kinky chaos. Among the incidents was a man who had crochet needles stuck in his urethra, and another who got his manhood stuck in a bottle. The training instructs personnel on how to remove the toys without injury. 600 took the course that was taking place last week in Dresden. Typical of the challenges was a weightlifter who was rescued by fire crews after his penis became stuck in the middle of an iron weight. That took rescuers 3 hours to cut him free with a grinder and a vibrating saw. I wonder how exciting that was for the weightlifter. Or was that a vibration he could have done without? Well, speaking of hard-to-reach places, customs officials have arrested two airline passengers in Sri Lanka for allegedly trying to smuggle 20 gold bars inside their rectums. The pair, aged 24 and 32, caught the officials' attention as they were noticed walking suspiciously. Well, you would too. The suspect smugglers had arrived from Singapore and Chennai when they were intercepted because of their suspicious movements. After they were stopped and had their bottoms scanned, and really, who wants that job? Gold bars were allegedly found concealed in their rectal cavities. One person was found hiding 8 gold bars, while the second had 12 bars up his butt. With each bar weighing at around 100 grams, they had a combined weight of 2 kilos of gold. Total value was an estimated $82,000 U.S. You know, this sounds like a bad sequel to a James Bond movie. Golden Ass. And what's the thought process when you're plotting this kind of crime? I mean, how do you know how many gold bars you can stash up there? One guy had 12 and the other had 8. Is the second guy an underachiever? Or is the first guy, you know, the gold standard? These are questions I want to know the answers to. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. In April, 32-year-old Scott Eklund was in 2 car crashes. Early in the month, he purposely crashed into a house saying a sex offender lived there. Investigators say the resident is not a sex offender. When troopers arrived, they found Eklund taking a fighting stance and claiming to be an FBI agent. He refused orders to lie on the ground and stated multiple times he was going to kill the officer and that he had an AR that he was going to shoot him with. The tense situation ended when Eklund tripped and fell down. He was quickly handcuffed and charged with battery on a law enforcement officer, resisting an officer with violence and threats to harm or kill an officer. Before that incident, Eklund had received at least 24 traffic citations in the past 16 months and served a brief time in state prison for battery of an officer in 2010. Okay, so later in April, Eklund crashed into a car. Florida Highway Patrol trooper Glodson Curado said Eklund was making no sense during their conversation, but he could understand one thing clearly. Eklund asked the trooper to let him run away so he could get more meth. Sure enough, the trooper found suspected methamphetamine and drug sales paraphernalia in the crashed car. Curado declined to let Eklund run away, instead taking him into custody on drug charges. You know, we've had so many meth stories on this program, and the jury is still out as far as the theories behind all these stories. I can't decide whether it's meth that makes people stupid, or if it's just stupid people who do meth. I'll need more grant money to continue my research. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Douglas Smythe is an expert in the art of traditional shaving, effective razor designs, soap making, and perfuming. He believes that we have been lied to for years by major multi-blade razor companies, and we have been inadvertently hurting ourselves by using their cheap, plastic, one-size-fits-all razors. Douglas joins us on the line via Skype from Arizona. Hi, Douglas.
Hey, Peter. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on the program with us. So what have most people, and I say most people because I'm not a person who shaves very often, what have most people been doing wrong over these years?
Simply using Cartridge razors. Cartridge razors and multi-blade razors are the worst things for your possible for your face, possibly. let's see. When I do a speaking engagement anywhere, I always ask the room how many men here think they have sensitive skin. And 9 out of 10 hands go up, which is impossible. We can't all have sensitive skin. So what's been going on is we've been hurting our faces using these wrong tools for the job for the last 40, 50 years almost. It's just all you need is a single blade. Multi-blades hurt your face. They shave too close. The first blade lifts the hair, the second cuts, third blade lifts, fourth one cuts, so on and so forth. So much so that it drops down below the skin and it's begging to be an ingrown. It's begging to be a razor bump. It's begging to be razor burn. We're hurting ourselves.
Now, that's very interesting you mentioned that. First of all, when I say I don't shave much, I've been a person who uses an electric razor. I believe you don't have, I'm assuming you're not a fan of one of those.
No, I'm not a fan of electric razors. Those are byproducts of crappy shaves, just like beards are. Most guys that have beards or use electrical razors, they're just not satisfied with the shave they could be getting by using a traditional razor.
It's interesting because my dad used a traditional razor, and you know, it seems to be a rite of passage that fathers teach their children how to shave. I never had that lesson from my dad.
No, and it's a myth.
and also, I was a person who came to facial hair very late. And by that, I mean, even today, if I am clean shaven and I have basically what is a Van Dyke.
Oh, me too.
If I am clean shaven, I can go 3 or 4 days before someone says, gee, you didn't shave today. So I'm lucky in that regard, and that I don't have to shave every day. So I never went through the razor route. But I'm also someone who is black. You talk about earlier, you mentioned ingrown hairs, and I understand there's a different set of circumstances when it comes to hair texture when you're talking to someone who is black.
It's true. And you know what? The whole reason why multi-blades and cartridge razors exist is because Gillette was running out of their patents for their single-edge DE razor blades. So they needed to create something new. And as soon as they did, they went overnight from a million-dollar company to a multi-billion-dollar company. So it was all created for money. And before then, there were no razor bumps. There was no razor burn. There were no ingrown hairs. No one talked about it back then. There were no products on the market to treat that with. And black men and people of color had a great shave. If you look at pictures from back in the day, you don't see the bumps that you do nowadays and whatnot because they didn't suffer from them then. It's the multi-blades that are doing it.
Okay, so
and that goes for everybody.
Okay, so in your estimation, the person with the average growth as far as facial hair is concerned, average growth spurts, and they're shaving every day, in your estimation, what's the best way to start and follow through and finish with the shaving experience, say it's something you do every morning? What you do?
You want to move over to a traditional razor or a safety razor. These are the tools your grandfather was using, and there's nothing wrong with them. In fact, you can still buy them, vintage ones rather, on eBay and they're in great shape. Still as good as the day they came off the assembly line 75 years ago. So they're built to last. These are heirloom pieces that you can pass down to your children and your children's children. But I digress. You need that, a double-edged blade. And now where cartridges is a 4-pack cartridges cost about $28 these days. You can get a 100-pack of DE blades for about $9 to $15. So right there, not only is it better for your face, it's better for your wallet. So you need a safety razor, a double-edged blade, a shaving brush, and a puck of soap. Now the shaving brush, not only is it to apply the lather to your face, it's also exfoliating on your skin. It stimulates the skin and exfoliates. These days, I think men tend to over-exfoliate. There's so many products on the market right now, and we're overdoing it. We don't need to exfoliate as much as the market tells us we do. It's just a money grab. But moving back to the brush, that's an exfoliating action. It's also applying lather to your face. You'd apply that first, and then with your safety razor, now with the blade loaded, you would do your first pass, which would just be down. And then you would, you know, rinse and repeat. Lather back up and do your second pass. Do as many passes, I don't recommend more than 4, until you feel like you got the shave you want. But that's just one blade dragging across your face. Now, to go back to multi-blades, every time you drag a blade across your face, you're taking off a layer of skin. So if you're using multi-blades, like 7 blades in one razor, you're taking off a lot of skin. And this is also part of the problem that's giving us sensitive, or making me think we have sensitive skin.
Now, how did this revelation come to you? And by the way, what you described as far as the shaving technique, that's exactly what my dad did all those years. I watched him. I just never did it.
But how was his skin? Do you remember what his skin looked like? I bet it was great.
Oh, yeah. He had extremely smooth skin. And he
didn't suffer from any bumps.
He never suffered from any bumps. Yeah. I never so much as saw 5 o'clock shadow on him. And he did have a mustache, but he never had a beard. So, he was always clean shaven, and he was a stickler for that. So that was something he did every morning. How did you come to become the male grooming expert?
Well, like you, I also observed my dad when I was little as well. He would use my grandfather's razor that passed down to him. And on the weekends, when he had time, when he was off from work, is when he would do, we call it wet shaving, a traditional wet shave. That's what he was doing. And I would sit there watching him in the bathroom. He'd set up a little stool next to the sink for me, and I'd get up there. And he gave me another razor too, another safety razor without the blade inside. And he'd lather me up, and we'd both, like, you know, go through the motions. But that's pretty much how I stumbled upon it.
And when do you feel you're going against the, literally against the grain, against the tide of what is generally accepted out there? The fact that there are so many multi-blade razors out there that people seem to be using. Do you feel you're going against the tide in going back to what was obviously a simpler and clearly better time?
Well, I don't know if the times were necessarily better, but the tools were definitely better. You know what I'm saying?
Well, when I say time, I'm talking about shaving-wise.
Yes. No, I just, too many people get nostalgic for times that never existed, I think. But the tools, they got it right. There's things in this world that they got right the first time. One is the tin can. The other is the safety razor. You know, I mean, you can't do wrong with this thing. People look at it and they're quite frightened by it, but it's called a safety razor for a reason. I just can't stress enough that people need to move back to these tools. And yes, I am going against the grain, and I am causing a little, making some waves, but it's coming into mainstream. It will get there. You will see it. It's better for your face. It's better for your wallet, and it's better for the environment at the end of the day too, because you're not using goo in a can, which is loaded with propellants, and it's just something else you throw in the landfill.
What is it then that what is it then that has so many people using the multiple razors? Is it the ease in which one can get their hands on them? Does it make the job go quicker? What is it that is drawing attention to it if, as you say, the safety razor is by far the best?
Well, the thing is, it just pulled them out of the stores. When they introduced the cartridge razor back in 1971, the double-edged blades they were selling at the time, they dulled to get people to move over to the cartridge razor way of shaving. And then they pulled all the double-edged blades out of the stores and the safety razors. So it's just access, really. Thanks to the internet, you know, for the last 10 years, a large group of us have gotten back into this, because now we can find blades again, we can find razors, but they don't make it accessible for you. They overcharge you for these pieces of plastic, and they don't make safety razors. They don't even talk about that. In fact, when Gillette was talking a couple years ago about how it was losing money, it said it was due to the beard craze that's going on here, all these guys growing beards. They didn't even mention, like, Art of Shaving in the mall or other safety razor stores and whatnot. They didn't mention that, because as soon as they do, then people will take notice. So they're aware of us.
Well, we have just about a minute. I want to make sure that people get an information as to where they can find you and what you have to offer. Because as I said in the introduction, you are into shaving, into effective razor design, soap making, and perfuming. So what do you have to offer, and where can people find it?
I do it all. And, you know, if you're just hearing this now and it's the first time you've ever heard of safety razors, I have starter kits on my site. I'm at phoenixshaving.com. I'm also available if anyone needs to talk to me about anything shave related. I'm always there. I could talk about this stuff all day. You can also find me at my YouTube channel, idlatherbeshaving.com. If you go to idlatherbeshaving.com, it's a morning shave show. It's in the same spirit of like Car Talk or Antique Roadshow. We look at the history, but we also make it really entertaining too. So whether you're into shaving or not, I think you're going to get a kick out of it. But you'll learn a lot for sure. So that's idlatherbeshaving.com. And lastly, if you're in the Florida area, I do have a big shaving festival coming up this June 30th called the Big Shave East, and it's free admission. To find out more about that, just go to bigshaveeast.com. But yeah, I could talk about this stuff all day long, Peter. Thank you so much for having me.
TheBigShaveEast.com, right?
BigShaveEast.com is the festival. My site is phoenixshaving.com, and my show is idlatherbeshaving.com. Check it out, people.
And since you know everything about shaving, one last quick question. When should someone start shaving? And by that I mean There are two trains of thought. One should either start shaving when hair first starts to appear, or one should shave just before that moment to facilitate hair starting to grow. Which one do you believe in?
Yeah, that's a big myth. That's like when they say, you know, women shouldn't shave their faces or use masks that pull out the hair when they pull it off their face because it'll cause more hair to grow after the fact. That's an old wives' tale. That's not true. I say shave when you have hair on your face and you want a clean shaven look. So it's going to be different for everybody. Genetics plays a huge, huge role in this, as you can imagine. But yeah, it's totally up to you.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Douglas, for being on the program with us.
Thanks for having me, Peter. Take care.
Shaving expert Douglas Smythe. You can visit his website at phoenixshaving.com. You can check out his YouTube morning show at idlatherbeshaving.com. And if you're in the Florida area in June, he has a big shaving festival called Big Shave East, taking place on June the 30th. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0457, and you'll find all of those links to Douglas's sites. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. Choosy mothers choose the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. If your mother didn't choose it for you, well, I guess she just doesn't love you.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about obnoxious coworkers. Plus, Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. We have an idiot of the day coming your way as well, plus more Stuff File news stories right here, right now, on a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make the show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, a naked South Carolina man who was caught by cops running down a street was apparently afraid of snakes. 56-year-old Greenwood, South Carolina resident Norman Keith Whiteman was charged with indecent exposure after being found running down a street at around 4:20 in the morning. He said he was on the run after being attacked by serpents. Whiteman told cops he was looking for snakes when they snuck up from behind him and slithered up his pants. According to a police report, he advised that the snakes began to bite him while he was walking down the roadway. Due to the snakes biting him, he began to undress on the side of the road in plain view of motorists. He then began running away from the snakes that were in his clothing. Now, cops say they found the nude man's pants down the street, but no other articles of clothing. The police report didn't state anything about snakes being found at the scene. Cops say Whiteman appeared to be under the influence of alcohol at the time of his arrest. So, police only found a pair of pants, but nothing else. Maybe the snake slithered off with his underwear, shoes, and shirt. Maybe that's what they were after in the first place. Yeah, that's it. Put out an APB for snakes that are dressed. Meanwhile, in Mississippi, a man accused of stealing a John Deere front-end loader, then using it to ram trailers and vehicles in a Walmart parking lot, told police he thought it was the end of the world and zombies were chasing him. 32-year-old Sean Stroud is accused of stealing the front-end loader in the early morning hours of April the 8th from Gulf Recycling. Police say he then drove in a short distance to the Walmart where mayhem ensued. Stroud is accused of hitting two occupied vehicles, several utility trailers, and three unoccupied vehicles. At the police station, court records say officers read Stroud his rights. He then told them about the zombies. County prosecutor Herman Cox said police secured a search warrant to draw blood from Stroud so they could determine whether he was under the influence of alcohol or drugs. You know, they should also check what he watches on television. I mean, people are highly influenced in a negative way by their viewing habits. Everything from The Walking Dead to Santa Clarita Diet to Fox News. An unidentified man in Tyrol, Austria, says he plans to defend himself against charges he violated public decency by defaming two police officers. In a Facebook post, the man warned area residents of a speed trap on a local highway by noting there were two Smurfs standing with lasers. Describing the officers as Smurfs is worthy of a 160 euro fine, they said. The man said it was simply a joke, not meant to be an insult. Well, I suppose that could be a simple mistake. I mean, it's sometimes hard to tell the difference between people in blue as opposed to people who are blue, especially if they're vertically challenged. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a Michigan engineering company employee has been fired after police determined she baked laxatives into brownies intended for a departing colleague's send-off. Saline Police Chief Jared Hart says officers confiscated the tainted confections on May the 3rd after another employee tipped off management. No one ate the brownies. Hart says the 47-year-old woman initially denied putting laxatives in the brownies, but after learning investigators would test them, she admitted she had. Her name hasn't been released. Other employees told police there may have been tension between the woman and the departing employee, but specifics haven't been released. Hart says the woman faces no charges, but if anyone had eaten the brownies, it would have been considered a criminal act. Wow. How bitter of a working relationship do you have when your alleged nemesis is leaving the job, but you still want to get some sort of revenge? That's carrying a grudge too far. I'll bet no one will ask her to share her recipes anymore. Imagine working with such difficult people. Yeah. Imagine a better segue to our next guest. Yeah. Imagine. What can you do when success at work depends on uncooperative, nasty people? How productive can you be when rude, obnoxious, argumentative people impede your progress at every step? Author, communication expert, and conflict resolution specialist Tamara Doris has some of the answers to those questions and offers tactics she uses to heal rifts between warring factions within corporations. She's the author of several books, including Imagine That and also The Referability Factor. She joins us on the line right now via Skype from California. Hi, Tamara.
How are you? It's so nice to be here.
Just tickety-boo. Thank you very much for being on the program with us. What do you have to say when it comes to dealing with obnoxious coworkers? Because I think we've spent a lot of time in the past talking about dealing with obnoxious bosses, which is a whole other thing in its own right. But the everyday coworkers that you may be able to or may not be able to avoid, how do you deal with those?
Well, and this is a great question. And you know, when you said about bosses, I just want to take a step back and say that it really doesn't matter if we're talking about bosses or coworkers or even people in your personal life. It always boils down to a couple of very, you know, beginning points. And the first one is that we have to stop and we have to look at what it is within ourselves. And people don't, you know, I do seminars all over the place and people don't always like to hear this until I explain it. But we always have to start with ourselves, because if we didn't have some trigger, if that person did not set some trigger off in ourselves, it would not bother us. You know, and this is why you'll have a friend and you'll say, oh my gosh, doesn't he or she drive you nuts? And your friend will say, no, not really. Well, that's because that person is triggering something in you. So that's not to say that there are not some people who are downright unpleasant, but that the very first place that we need to look is at ourselves and what it is that is being triggered in ourselves.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because I was going to ask that question from another angle, and that angle being, when it comes to obnoxious coworkers, how do you know that you're not the obnoxious coworker?
Well, it depends how metaphysical you want to get there, Peter. But, you know, in my mind and based on my research, and I take it all from a scientific perspective, we tend to attract what we are. And so the first, it's a red flag for me when someone says, oh, my gosh, this person's so obnoxious. Now, if 15 people are telling me that, or even 10, you know, and I go into a corporation to do conflict resolution, then there might be something to it. But when it's just two people not getting along, a lot of times they're just bouncing, they're just running into each other, if that makes sense.
Okay, so once we realize that this person sets off some sort of trigger within ourselves, what then? What do we do about it?
So human nature is highly, highly dictated by our egos. And so what I have found and what I teach in my conflict resolution trainings is that we have to get our ego out of the picture. Now, we can't do it entirely, but a lot of times we'll find out it's like a big tangle in a hair. If you just keep unraveling it, you're going to find the very beginning of that tangle started from ego. And so when we can release our ego a little bit, then we can begin to see the other person's side. And you know, to do that effectively, I think it begins with empathy, putting yourself, you know, I often have people do role play reversal when two people aren't getting along. Now you imagine you're him, now you imagine you're her. And that kind of, it's kind of therapeutic, and it can just really open people's eyes to how they're viewing something, and their perception could be a little skewed.
Do you find that it's a situation where people are not willing to work together because they're just used to working on their own? In other words, there are a lot of jobs you have which aren't necessarily team required, and suddenly, for whatever reasons, you're thrust into a situation on a particular project where you're not necessarily adept at being in a team situation because you haven't done that before. You know, things change within the job structure, for instance.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, I have to go back to what I said. It's ego. And I have trained so many people who will tell you, and this is kind of disconcerting, but there are so many people in the American workforce who will say, well, I really don't like people. And it's really, you know, it's just people go to work, and if it's not necessarily they don't like other people, but maybe they don't like their job, or maybe they're having issues that they're not finding fulfillment in their lives, and they're just kind of, you know, projecting it out to people that they work with. Because if you're really happy at what you're doing and you're really finding joy in your work, you're going to find a way to get around your ego if someone's just kind of ticking you off.
Also, isn't it also possible that, for instance, I mean, in everyone's life, there is a certain amount of conflict. That's just part of living. But there are people who don't like conflict.
Yeah, well, there are people who don't like confrontation.
Yes.
I would say conflict is, you know, your conflict is as simple as you not getting your food on time in a restaurant. So conflict is, as you said eloquently, it's a very normal part of life. But confrontation scares people, and that really boils down to our deep down DNA programmed ability or I don't know what we would call it, but the operation of the mind is we don't want anyone to be mad at us. We don't want to be rejected. And so confrontation kind of says, you may reject me if I confront you.
So when you go around talking to corporations, companies, I mean, they're bringing you in. I'm assuming you get to talk to a lot of these companies because someone in that organization already perceives that there are some issues. Would that be correct?
It would be correct, absolutely.
So you're going into a place where there is already a perceived problem. When you walk in the door, can you suss out very quickly how extreme this problem can be or is, as opposed to being a mild form of it? In other words, someone like yourself who is a professional at this, are the signs easy to read?
You know, sometimes they actually are. And you mentioned if someone comes to me and says, we have a problem already, I can usually interpret on the language that the person who called me in, and obviously without saying any names, I did a large company, maybe 125 employees. And just the way that the CEO emailed me and his verbiage was absolutely releasing any possibility that he was the problem, which he was. But my employees aren't getting along. People aren't listening. You know, I need you to come in and give a communications workshop. And just by the language he used and his inability to take responsibility for anything was a really clear indicator to me that he was more part of the problem than he was the solution.
Okay. Let's bring up something that's in the news. And I'm not talking about this situation specifically, but I'm using this as an example. We're seeing all kinds of and hearing about all kinds of trouble and internal turmoil going on in the West Wing of the White House. People are backstabbing. People are sniping at each other. People are leaking information against each other. Take that microcosm and put it in any other company. What would you do under those circumstances if someone called you into a situation like that?
I'd put them each in their individual corners and make them stay there till they played nice. Seriously, I do a lot of, you know, when I do, one of my big things about conflict resolution is I kind of insist that we have all levels of management dispersed throughout the room. If I've got 100 people, I don't want management all at one table. I intersperse everyone. I want the person at the very bottom and the person at the very top. I want them all mixed up. And once we begin to do some exercises on commonalities. So I always seek to find the commonalities before we address the issues, if that makes sense. Because if that rapport is built between people, it's just like, hey, you might be on my side. You and I aren't that different. So I try to find commonalities first.
We are creatures of habit. Do you find when you delve down into a problem that a company might be having that it seems to stem back to a change of some kind, either in company structure, in workforce, in the way things are done, that change is usually at the core of this?
You know, I think that that's a really good possibility. I think, but I would go back, Peter, and I would say that maybe the change is a catalyst for an underlying problem. And what I mean by that is basically what we do as human beings in the workforce. I'm talking about, you know, North America in general. I don't know in New Zealand, but in North America in general, where I've done most of my research, what I have found is that people really project their personal lives into their professional environments. And so most of us are really just going to work with our problems being projected in the work environment on a much more subtle level. And when you get people together that have different projections of that, there's going to be conflict.
So to break it down, it's the old analogy that people would say sometimes in a sexist kind of way, happy wife, happy life. Let's take that and say happy life, happy work.
Exactly. Very well said. I would 100% agree with that.
Excellent. Very informative indeed. Tell us a little bit about, very quickly, about a minute. Tell us about your book, both the one that deals on this topic and your most recent one, Imagine That.
Well, Imagine That is really just about using your imagination. Corporations can use it for building visions. I you know, speak of that. And the referability factor really is helping you be attractive, and I'm not talking date-wise, but if you want to use it for that, but it's helping you become the kind of person that people are drawn to. And so whether it's in the office or in your personal life or, you know, whatever your profession is, it really doesn't matter. At the end of the day, we need other people, and so I use the science and the psychology behind. It's kind of like, I would say, a big updated version of How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Tamara, thank you very much for being on the program with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Conflict resolution specialist Tamara Doris, author of such books as Imagine That and also The Referability Factor. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0457, and you'll find links to Tamara's site, plus also links to Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. When the Federal Endangered Species Act was signed into law in 1973, it established a system for designating a vulnerable species as either endangered or threatened. Bald eagles were once endangered, and after 45 years, only 1% of species protected by that law have gone extinct. That's tremendous progress. However, when both categories are added together, a full 98% of species that have been placed on these protected lists over the years are still listed as needing protection. Some experts now believe that we could do more to get species off those lists by actually relaxing regulatory regulations as a species recovers. Too often, the burden of protecting a species falls squarely on landowners, not the government. Let's be fair, it seems counterintuitive to say that relaxing regulations can help a vulnerable species, but some experts believe that doing so would give landowners more incentive to speed up changes that can help a species recover. Learn more at centerforamericatv.org.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And yes, from the city that never sleeps, we do indeed have Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby. Hello, sir.
Hello, hello, hello. Live from the streets of New York.
Now, there is a lot of news these days swirling around Donald Trump's fixer, his alleged lawyer, Michael Cohen. And one of the items that keeps popping up in the news deals with your profession. Apparently, he has a lot of valuable taxi medallions in his possession. What do you know about this?
Yeah, well, what I know about it is he's a bum. barring anything else in life and whatever things he's done, and I think more and more stuff is going to come out about him, is that you know what a slumlord is? Well, you got the same deal in the taxi industry. You got these guys who go out, buy the medallions. They, of course, are not going to drive the cab. And then they don't repair them. They don't take care of them. They're always having problems. They're always breaking down. He's a slumlord of taxi world. And whatever happens to him now and everything else his endeavors are, it's like the chickens coming home to roost. And by the way, I don't know the guy, but he's pretty much of a sleazebag.
Now, for those who are not in the know, those not familiar with New York taxis, there is a limited amount of taxis allowed in the city of New York, and everyone who has a taxi has to buy a taxi medallion, and those are very, very valuable. At one point, you could buy them for upwards of $1 million. Now, they're still relatively expensive. I'm not mistaken, they're around the $200,000 mark. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, because the market has dropped tremendously because of companies like Uber. Now, keep in mind, Uber's a brand name, but it's that type of thing, you know, where they use an app. So here you got a whole bunch of people who went out, bought a medallion worth $1 million. Now it's worth $175,000, but the loan they took out was $1 million. It's absolutely the dirtiest, nastiest trick that the city of New York has ever pulled on anybody. We have today in New York City 26,000 of the Uber-type cabs, which have basically killed the yellow cab industry. And speaking of killed, so far this year, 4 yellow cab drivers have committed suicide because they're so unbelievably distraught.
Wow. And for the record, for in case, again, people don't know, Ubers are not required to have medallions. Ubers don't have that outlay of cash to become an Uber driver, but there's a lot to become a taxi owner.
Yeah, there is. And in addition to that, the Uber guy is driving his own car.
Right.
I mean, his own vehicle. So, I mean, that kind of gets absorbed. But remember, I'm sensitive to the fact that I'm not defending them because I think they're the biggest sleazebags of all. But in all fairness, Uber is just, just a brand name of one particular aspect of a sleazy industry. It's the same thing with Airbnb. And I have stories about them. What? But Airbnb is the name, but the generic name is really bed and breakfast.
Right. Well, I wanted to get to that story, actually. Apparently, a Manhattan judge has ordered an artist booted from her apartment. Why?
Well, here's the deal. In New York, and I've said this till I'm blue in the face, and people say to me, but they got to be legal because they're on the Internet. That doesn't mean anything. It's illegal. If you had an apartment in New York City, you can't rent it out to somebody else by the day or the night or the week or even the month, okay? You have to have, I think it's 6 months is the limit. You know, a real sublease. You can't turn it into a hotel. And, of course, people do it because they figure they're going to get a lot of money from all this Airbnb bed and breakfast people. Well, the chickens there, too, have now finally come home to roost. Because this landlord went after the tenant who was running a hotel, and the judge ruled that the tenant had to give to the owner of the building $180,000 in penalties, and they haven't figured out yet what the tourist is going to have to do. So once again, let me remind your nice listeners, don't get near anything that's like Airbnb. It's illegal in New York. Now, on the other hand, if it's one of your listeners, I'll come and pick them up in the middle of the night and take them to a real hotel when they get thrown out. That's part of the Peter Anthony Holder service.
I'm glad to hear that. Now, one of the other stories that's in the news of late is the recent moving of America's embassy in Israel to Jerusalem, and that has had an effect on the delicate situation that has always been the Middle East. Now, New York City is a huge melting pot that includes people from literally all over the world. It's a microcosm of what the world has to offer. Has any of that situation taking place in Israel had any effect on the microcosm of the many people from the various Middle East countries that live in New York?
Well, let me tell you, the person that's affected the most is me. I'm fit to be tied. And why am I fit to be tied? Is because today I saw people from CNN, from the New York Times, from the Washington Post, running up and down Atlantic Avenue, which is an avenue in Brooklyn that has a lot of Muslims, saying, are you upset about this? Do you think there should be violence? Are you, you know, this, actually, to trying to stoke up, that's a very big Muslim section, stoke up the people of the area. And I'm very proud to tell you, as a New Yorker, they weren't buying it. Okay? But it was so obvious. I wished I had a video crew with me to film these guys who were trying to start it up. It's almost like, hey, maybe we're going to have a war. That'd be terrific. Let me assure everybody that the Muslims in New York City are not upset. I mean, they're bothered, of course, by all of this going on. But they're not going to riot. They're not going to burn. They're not going to loot. There's not going to be any kind of problem. So if you and I want to go to the Muslim area tonight for a nice Middle East dinner, we can without any problem at all. The neighborhood we have to stay out of is the Canadian neighborhood, because they're crazy.
One of the other things that's in the news a lot in the last week or so is the fact that you guys lost an attorney general because of some improprieties that he was involved in his personal life. That's been getting big news everywhere. But on a lesser scale, there's a story that's somewhat similar involving an NYPD captain.
Yeah, well, I mean, these guys can't keep their pants on. And, you know, I mean, I don't know what it is. It's a crazy sickness or something or other, which should put them in jail. But there's always the side story to it, which is more annoying than the main story. For instance, the cop who was doing something or other with the women cops so that they would get certain shifts and jobs, his union is defending him. The captain's union is saying, there's nothing to defend. Throw the bum out. And as a matter of fact, throw out the commission. So, you know, that's what happens with those things. Same thing with the attorney general. They found out that he was doing the mufky-fufky when he shouldn't have been doing it. And instead of every politician in Albany, that's our capital, closer to you than closer to me, in getting hysterical about it, the guy resigns and he goes out. I guarantee you'll still get his pension.
Mm. Meanwhile, it's just ironic. On our show, in the last couple of weeks, we've talked a lot about straws. We first talked to a woman who runs a company in Cambodia that makes bamboo straws, reusable bamboo straws. We then talked to somebody else who told us about the history of the straw. And now I understand in your fair city, you might see the end of the straw, at least the plastic ones.
Yeah, well, the critical word is plastic, because New York City has declared war on plastic things. That's plastic bags and now plastic straws. And frankly, the only people who are getting upset about it are the people who make plastic things. I mean, if you say to the average New Yorker, would you mind using a paper straw? Nobody cares. Would you mind using a paper bag or taking along your own bag, which is what we do in my family? We have a canvas bag, well, a few canvas bags that we take along with us when we go shopping. But yeah, if anybody who's listening now to your nice show has a plastic straw, they better keep it as an heirloom.
Mm. And we talked a little bit about the Airbnb thing. I want to touch on another story that actually deals with an apartment. I understand there was a longtime off-Broadway actress who died recently. And what was her rent at the apartment she had?
Well, as I remember, this figure was about $30 a month.
Wow.
Which is absolutely ridiculous. But see, we have something in New York that's called rent control and rent stabilization. Buildings that were built before World War II have that situation. And that means the rents are fixed, and the landlord can't just raise them like he could in the free market. However, let me hasten to point out that the landlord is still guaranteed a profit. I think it's about 12%. So even though she was paying $30 a month, the guy was still making money on the apartment. But now, since she's gone to that tenant's place in the sky, he's going to fix up the apartment and rent it for $5,000 a month.
Wow. That's a big hike.
But don't ever, anybody, ever feel sorry for a New York landlord.
Okay. Or a medallion owner. Maybe a medallion owner.
No, the medallion owner is the guy that got screwed.
Yeah. Okay. Well, before we let you go, sir, I always ask if there's a celebrity sighting because, you know, you're in the city that never sleeps, and that includes celebrities. So who have you seen?
Well, I've seen the space guy, I can't pronounce his name. You pronounce it.
Rick Moranis? Rick Moranis?
Yeah, Moranis. Rick Moranis. And I have a picture of him on the website, but he wasn't dressed that way, but I thought it was funny to show him from Spaceballs, which is one of my most favorite movies, which I think was done by Mel Brooks, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yes,
it was. You certainly do love your Canadians, don't you?
Well, you're all over the place. You're like a plague.
Oh, if anybody is in the New York area and they're looking for a great tour of your fair city, they should look no further than getting to your website, perhaps sending you an email. They can send an email to peter@gabby.com. Sir, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program to talk with us.
You got it, sweetheart. Bye-bye.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about out of racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We do have an idiot of the day coming up in just a matter of moments, but I've got one more Stuff File news story that I want to share with you right here, right now. Two people are in jail after they were seen naked walking away from their house that was on fire. Neighbors say just days and hours before the fire, the family sold all of their furniture and were giving away money just before they were seen walking naked near their South Maid, Texas home. According to next-door neighbor Joshua Meek, his neighbors, Michael and Shannon Willette, and their 13-year-old daughter were very good people, very warm and helpful. But recently, he said, they were getting rid of all their stuff and acting odd. They went and sold every one of their personal belongings, he said. They went to a park and literally were handing out $100 bills. Hours later, around 2 p.m. Monday, their home caught fire. They were seen walking away from it naked. When police tried to stop them, they were charged at and a scuffle began. According to South Maid Police Chief Chad McKee, at this point, I ended up backing off. Meek says he thinks they were getting ready for the end. They believe today was Judgment Day. The couple were arrested for attacking a police chief and an officer, evading arrest, and endangering their child. The 13-year-old was flown to a Plano, Texas hospital. Meek said he had never seen them do drugs, but both were tested for drugs and the results are pending. Meek said, I've seen a lot of crazy things, and that hit the top three list. Everyone pray for them. They were good, honest people, he added. The state fire marshal is still investigating an official cause for the fire. So, the neighbor says this is in the top three of crazy things he's seen. How is it not the top? And for the love of God, what are the other two on his list? I'm beginning to wonder who's led a more interesting life, the Willettes or their neighbor? Anyway. We're at that point, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, near the end of the program, the moment you've all been waiting for. It's time now for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
A Fort Myers, Florida store clerk was making sure you never won at lottery scratch-offs. Investigators say Wendy Klinker was pre-scratching lotto tickets, keeping the winners and selling the losers. The Florida Department of Lottery said a customer at the Circle K noticed his Gold Rush doubler ticket had small scratches on it in February. That led agents to the store where they found 83 tickets with what they called micro-scratches ready to be sold to unsuspecting customers. Investigators say they reviewed the store's surveillance cameras that showed Klinker scratching the tickets, pocketing the winners, and putting losers back in a pile to be sold. With scratch-offs selling for up to $20 each, customers said with Klinker, their chances of winning was zero. Klinker was arrested for tampering with lotto tickets. Now, why? Oh, why? Would you think you could get away with this for a long period of time? Did you think no one would ever examine the tickets you sold them? Or are you just an idiot?
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0457. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0457. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Evolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded in iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. If you were to play this episode backwards, any given the... Go ahead, try and figure that out.